Hi, and welcome to the Now Spinning Magazine podcast with me, Phil Aston. And in this episode, I'm absolutely delighted to have with me Rob Weir, guitarist and founder member of the Tigers of Pantang, one of the original new wave of British heavy metal bands. Now, the band originally formed in 1978. That's the year of Long Live Rock and Roll by Rainbow, the first Van Halen album. And you're still playing all around the world now. You've got a new album out in May this year called Bloodlines. In 1978, could you imagine, Rob, that here you are in 2023 still playing in the Tigers of Pantang?
No. Absolutely not. Hello to all your listeners, viewers, readers, and crushies. No, not really. I think it started off as a dream, as it does for most young musicians. You get your first guitar. You bash out a few chords. You learn a few things, and then you think you watch Top of the Pops, and you think, yeah. Oh, I'd love to do that. And then if you're knocking on the right doors, things move a little bit further forward. And I've been very fortunate, I have to say. The doors did open for me, the first band that I formed and put together was a band called Trick, sort of late 76 into 77. And you know that long in the days, long before video and mobile phones and the internet and anything like that. And gosh, I'd give so much money if somebody had come with their old Cine 8, and taken some footage of the band, because we were hilarious. so there was me with hair down to my waist playing heavy metal guitar, the bass player. It was also called Rob. Was into the Crusaders and jazz funk. Yeah. And he looked like Jesus Christ from Jesus Christ Superstar. So our singer Graham, who later became one of our managers, was a punk. The drummer Eric was a rhythm and blues skiffle sort of. Wow. Drummer.
Yeah.
And we're all trying to play in our various styles.
Yeah.
Heavy metal songs of the day, like, Whole Lotta Rosie by AC/DC. Bastille Day by Rush and all this kind of stuff. So you've got a kind of a funky bass line.
Slapping the bass, yeah.
Knocking out metal chords. And Graham used to sing in a punk style in his pajamas. And you've got a rhythm and blues sort of drummer at the back trying to, his bass drum kept walking away from him because it wasn't anchored down to the stage properly. And it was just, it was hilarious. Honestly, it was, I'd love to see some footage back of that.
Sounds like you should have been huge.
Definitely a legend in our own lunchtime, but there you are. So,
cool. It was an interesting time, though, wasn't it? Because 78, in a way, all the music press was obsessed with punk, and all the rock bands are seen as dinosaurs. But for me, and probably you as well, we were still like teenagers, and all the music press is saying all these bands are old hat. But I felt like I'd only just left school and discovered them. And I guess that's how the new British heavy metal came around. It had that kind of punk attitude, but it was rock music. Now, I remember there were labels like Heavy Metal Records, Neat Records, which I think you were connected to, and I think there might have been a third one called Ebony, was it, I think, or something like that, yeah?
Yes, it was, yeah.
And then as obviously the music press started to think, do you know what, there might be some more mileage in these like guitar bands, and the big labels came looking for, obviously, Iron Maiden, Samson, Saxon, Def Leppard, and then MCA, came and found your good selves. What was that like?
They did, yes. That was, yeah, it was, we were playing at a local high school, the guy who owned Neat Records had a recording studio called Impulse Recording Studios in a suburb of Newcastle upon Tyne. And his two sons were at this school where we were playing this after-school concert. As the Tigers, playing a mixture of... We were quite novel because we did play working men's clubs, but we played half our own original material and half songs of the day. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you really... To play working men's clubs, you really had to just play covers. For the lasses to dance around the handbags. Yeah. But we got away with it. We played our own songs and we thought, well, if you want to get people, on board and interested in your material, then you've got to play it to them. After the event, we met this guy called Dave Woods, and he said, listen, I've got a recording studio. What do you think about coming down and recording some of your original material? So we said, yeah, that's great. First time we'd ever been in a real recording studio. Recorded some songs. One of them everybody felt would make a great single, and we're saying, Greg, a single? What's going on here? Don't Touch Me There became the single. It was released. Sounds wrote about it. Tommy Vance played it.
Wow.
And it took off. And I think the original 7-inch pressing, I think Dave had something like, we had 1,000 pressed. I do remember that. And that went within about 3 days. So he then had another 4,000 pressed.
Yeah.
And they were shipped out and sold like to all the shops. And then MCA contacted Dave, and Dave contacted our manager. I'm sure a deal was done, to which we, didn't get anything from. And MCA, of course, we found ourselves signed to a major record label, probably the richest one in the world, because MCA were funded and connected to CIC Universal Videos. As Universal make all the big films.
That's right.
Or they did. MCA pressed 50,000. Another 50,000 were shipped out and sold. So that single had a lot of mileage in it, and got a lot, because when the major label came in, then their huge press machine, got involved, and we found ourselves with page adverts in all the music press sounds. Sound Newspaper and Melody Maker and New Musical Express, and
wow. So
it goes on. We were in the right place at the right time. We were very lucky. But the bands that you were talking about there, certainly for what I remember, the big four, if you like, that were signed first were Iron Maiden. They signed to EMI.
Yeah.
Def Leppard signed to Phonogram.
Yeah.
Saxon signed to Kerrang.
Yeah,
and we signed to MCA, and we were like the first four, which certainly Jeff Barton wrote about.
Yes, that's right, yeah.
And then I think that the sluice gates opened, and a lot more bands came through. Absolutely.
But your first album, Wildcat, went to number 18 in its first week of release.
It did,
and as you say, you were the first four through the gate of that musical movement, and you must have felt seeing your album hit the top 20 that you'd arrived.
Oh God, absolutely. I remember we were in a cafe across the road from King's Cross Station in London with our record producer at the time, Chris Tangarides. And we just heard that it had gone straight in to the top 20 in the charts at 18. And Chris said to us, boys, I think we've got a hit album on our hands. But we're not talking about just a dedicated rock chart here. We're talking the national British charts.
Yeah.
So you know, with the likes of David Bowie and Gloria Gaynor Michael Jackson multi-platinum big hard hitters, and there's Little Old Tigers of Pantang from Whitley Bay in there with a number 18 album. So yeah, it was quite something. And you have to do a reality check, you know, because we're one of the biggest agents on the planet then, ITB, International Talent Booking, who handled everybody who was anybody. And, you know, when we went out and we did the Wildcat Tour, I mean, the Wildcat Tour sold out overnight. We were playing like 2,000 sort of capacity venues, which were the old Top Ranks and Mecca ballrooms. Yeah. We had such a blast on that tour. And it was because of the huge press that we'd had, the big push from the record company. It really does work. There's absolutely no doubt about it. I don't think maybe we would have achieved that level of success had we stayed with Neat Records.
Yeah.
Yeah. They were a small independent label. They didn't have the money to, you know, for tour support and, you know, to take out a 40 foot articulated lorry and, you know, a crew of 10 and all the rest of it. You know, it was really something. But to stand on stage and play the songs that you've written to 2,000 people that have come because they like your songs, that's the bit which sends the hairs standing up on the back of your neck. And you kind of think, wow, something's got right here.
Because it's a very raw, almost punky album in places with the sound.
It's very different
to anything else. Because the next two albums, Spellbound and Crazy Nights, I've got a more kind of polished production. And it felt as if you'd gone up a gear on both those albums.
Yeah, absolutely. We changed the big factor of that was, of course, we changed singer, and John Deverell had an incredible vocal range, coming from the Welsh Valleys, you know.
Yeah.
It just his vocal range and his vocal ability, just, you know, that alone was certainly one of the big factors. And of course, John Sykes joining, and John and I were sharing the songwriting. I think, you know, that moved us forward. John being such a fantastic guitar player, I kind of, when he joined the band, I kind of thought to myself, oh my goodness, I'm going to have to, you know, try and, you know, get better, but nowhere near as good as certainly John was. And you know, we're friends to this day. He lives in the States, and we talk quite often.
Oh, that's good.
I've tried to encourage him to
come out again.
Yeah, but the last email I had from him last year was, Rob, I'm kind of retired now. I don't think I want to do it anymore. And I said to him, John, the world's waiting for you to come out and, you know, maybe do it one more time. And he's, I can't get him.
Yeah, I mean, it's a... Because I remember at the time when he joined, and because he had these flowing golden mane of hair, and he just looked the part.
Rock star quality.
Yeah. So and everything he went on to do and who he was with, it is surprising that he hasn't kind of come out again. But the tracks during this period of the band's career, Wildcats, Money, Hellhound, Silver and Gold, Raised on Rock, they're all bona fide classics, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and indeed, you know, we still play a lot of those songs are still included, you know, in our live sets to this day.
Yeah, so I guess at this time, because although we had the new wave of British heavy metal, the Americans were waking up about 82 to 84, weren't they? And they were kind of tweaking their control panel to be more kind of AOR and melodic rock and almost pop metal. And I guess a lot of the record companies were starting to think, this looks interesting. And the new wave of British heavy metal was very raw, very punky metal kind of riff driven songs. Because obviously the Cage was had lots of fantastic reviews at the time. I remember seeing it myself in Kerrang and Sounds and everything. That the Cage was like a totally new version of the Tigers. But in a way, did you feel it was going away from the spirit of where you were coming from?
Yeah, I did. The Cage was, it's a completely different Tigers album, really. It was the record company trying to push us towards America. There's very few band written songs on the Cage. They were all from outside songwriters outside the band, and that really went against the grain with me. I thought, hang on, I've written an album called Wildcat. It went into the chart at 18. So I can write songs. I know that. Why am I playing and learning other people's songs? That's not really what I signed up for. And we actually recorded on 4-track and demoed. Fred came around to everybody's house and recorded it, all of us, and did a marvelous job putting together this of what was going to be our fifth album.
Yeah.
And I remember us playing it to the record company in the boardroom, and they said, after we played it to them, they said, yeah, it's very good, but we've got these songs that we'd like you to record, from different songwriters. And I just said, do you know what? I'm not doing it. I didn't sign up for this. I'm not playing other people's songs. I'm not doing it. I'm out of here. And everybody kind of followed. So whether that was a very brave thing or a very stupid thing, I don't know. But I didn't want to play other people's songs. I just didn't want to do it.
So this is a period, isn't it, from the mid-80s to the late 80s, where basically you'd left MCA, and basically the band had disbanded, as you just said. Hmm. But there was at some point during this period where there were two versions of the Tigers.
No, there was never two versions. That wasn't the Tigers of Pantang. That was just a band called Tiger Tiger.
Oh right, okay.
Yes, it was Jess, the original singer. I wrote a load of songs, and we were going to record an album. Jess actually asked the readership of Sounds, I think of Sounds magazine. Certainly one of the magazines, what the new band that Jess and I were in should be called, and somebody came up with Tiger Tiger. So we went with that. We played a handful of shows. We recorded one track called mm-hmm. Small Town Flirt. Jess didn't really commit to it any more than that. So we never got to record the full album. So it was just shelved. And I went on to form a band called Sergeant with Brian Dick, the original Tigers drummer. And we recorded an album with material there, actually in Brian Johnson's recording studio he had at the time, up in the Northeast. And we got a deal with CBS Records. It was worth a lot of money. I came back to the Northeast with the guy who was managing us, Colin Rowell, and we had a band meeting. And at the band meeting, the band said, we don't want to carry on with Rob in the band. And Colin and I kind of looked at each other and thought, oh, right, okay. So they replaced me with a keyboard player and a guitar player. They played about 4 or 5 shows and then fell to bits. Colin and I cancelled the record deal we had with CBS. I became particularly disillusioned with the music industry and left, sold everything.
Wow. So the version of the band that did the Wreck Age and Burning in the Shade,
That was John Deverill and Brian.
Because that was very, very pop metal. It was so far removed from where it originally come from, wasn't it? It was almost like a totally different sound and band, really.
Yeah, and unfortunately that imploded for them. That wasn't, I suppose, carrying the essence of the band's, along, really. Otherwise it would have succeeded.
So you've now reached the point you've literally sold everything and turned your back on the music business. And mm-hmm. We're just entering the 90s, which were, for any rock band, even if they were still together, the 90s was weird. This is before Classic Rock magazine wasn't going to appear until 1998. Grunge had arrived, and all of a sudden, tight leather jackets and trousers were definitely not in. And so how were the 90s at that point for you? Had you literally just thought, done that, had a good time?
Yeah, do you know, I never stopped collecting LPs, and indeed, you know, saw the birth of CDs and thought, I'm not buying any of them. I'm not buying a CD. The sound's too clear and it's too pure and it doesn't have the, you know, the warble and the rumble and the, all the kind of stuff that went on with LPs. Yeah. But of course, you know, I got converted like everybody else. I never stopped, you know, buying new music and collecting it and listening to it, or indeed going to shows. And of course, when I did go to shows, I remember I went to see Thunder, their very first show up in Newcastle at the Riverside. You know, they were brand new, nobody'd heard of them, and they were brilliant. They were headlining with Jagged Edge supporting them. I went to see Little Angels first. One of their first shows at the Riverside, thought they were great. So I still went to shows, but, and there was always that little burning
thing, spark.
Something bubbling inside me, wishing I was kind of, you know, on stage really, rather than, you know, standing watching. But, you know, I didn't do anything about it. It was just that sort of sad feeling, I suppose, inside.
And then Wacken happened, didn't it?
I just got a phone call out of the blue. You know, I was doing something else in my life, completely non music related. And the phone rang, and it was Jess saying there's a reunion going on, 20 years reunion of the Tigers. Was I interested? And I think it took me half a nanosecond to say, yes, I'm in. Then realised I hadn't got any guitars, I hadn't got any amps, so I had to go out and start all over again, really. Which hey-ho, I didn't mind. And here we are chatting now, you know, several albums later, several world tours later.
Were you, when you did that live album at Wacken, I mean, when you actually went, were you nervous about, but how did you feel walking onto that stage after all that time?
Well, it was 1 o'clock in the morning. There was 22,500 people, you know, that hadn't, left the arena and gone to their tents. I was contemplating putting bike clips on my trousers because they were rapidly filling up with material that was coming out of my body. So yeah, I was shit myself. I had a very dry throat. But you know what? After the first 10 seconds, it all came flooding back because I hadn't played 99. I hadn't really played for about 80, 11 years, something like that, 87, 97, 12 years maybe, in front of people. But thankfully, it came back quite quickly. And, you know, by the time we're at the end of the first number, I was, you know, leaping around like I always leap around. But what did happen in that hour and a bit performance was I got well and truly bitten again by the rock and roll bug, and thought to myself, I'm going to have to do this again because I actually quite like it.
Yeah, well, I mean, Wildcat sounds absolutely phenomenal on that concert. Mm. It's just like it was reborn. You know, you can feel the crackle of energy. That's why I was interested in how you felt, because it just sounds like you just put a pair of gloves on and you're just doing it. It sounds absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, thanks. We recorded the occasion as well, which came out as a live album.
Yeah, it's great.
But yeah, that came out pretty well as well. Yeah.
So then you get the bug again, and then I think there's some the albums. Is it Mystical, Noise from the Cat House, Animal Instinct, across three separate labels? Was this by design, or just trying to find someone who'd be interested to put your stuff out?
The labels were, in truth, the labels were dire. Really, there was no tour support, so there was very little financial support. So it went from Zed Records to, which is no more, of course, to Communique Records, which is no more, of course. And you know, what does that tell you about the sustainability and their ability to, you know, to keep artists? It was just zero. And I don't know, maybe they just weren't quite set up right. So yeah, we had a few disasters, which, you know, bands do have.
They do, yeah.
But you know, came through it, you know, kept on going, which is, you know, I tell every young musician that asks me the question, you know, I say to him, if you want to do it and you know, you want to do it badly enough, then, you know, find a way to do it. So we didn't let those setbacks, you know, affect us to the point where, you know, we just said, well, that's it. Then we're not getting anywhere. That's it. We're just there's the brick wall. We can't go any further. No, you go and borrow a ladder and you climb up and you climb over the brick wall and off you go again.
Because during this period, not only was it was obviously you're trying to get a band off the ground again, but the music business itself was completely changing around you, wasn't it? During this decade that you've just entered, CD sales and vinyl sales and pirating and streaming was also coming along. There was a lot going on.
There was, yeah. The odds certainly weren't in our favour, but you just don't give up. You know, if you want to do something, you just don't give up. And we didn't. After Noises from the Cat House, which I thought was a great title for an album, actually.
It is, yeah.
Richie left, the singer, and we auditioned. Not just in this country, obviously, we auditioned internationally as well. There was a Jack tells this story an awful lot better than me. A talent agency put him forward, and I think they were Swiss, and sent us a record which the band that he was in called Mantis from Italy.
Oh, yeah.
Sent us their CD. And in truth, I thought it was all right, but I didn't think it was outstanding. But his singing was great. It was probably the material that I didn't think was outstanding, and I don't mean, you know, any disparagement to the musicians. That's just my personal, you know, view on it. Yeah. But there was something about Jack and something about Jack's voice. So we paid for him to fly over, and he auditioned. And I stopped the audition 45 seconds into the audition. And he had his back to us, and he kind of turned around like in horror. And I said, I looked at the boys, and I could see the look on their faces. And I turned to Jack and I said, "Job's yours if you want it." So we actually didn't even finish the song. We down tools and went to the. There was a bar in the complex, and we just went to the bar and had a drink.
Fantastic. Well, so the next album this is the album when, because I know when I said the very start, before we went live with the interview, that when you have a band like yourself with a long legacy, people see the first peak and then they forget that you've come back or you're still going.
Yeah.
And for me now, it's, I think it's 2012, and I hear an album called Ambush.
Yeah.
And it's by the Tigers of Pantang. And it's keeping me alive. These eyes, one of a kind, rock and roll dream. It's just like, oh my god, this is the Tigers of Pantang. And I feel like it, just as you enter this period, you are. This is like your purple patch in a way. It's like the albums that now come one after the other are just absolutely amazing. I mean, did you feel when you made Ambush that you'd taken off, you'd literally, you were coming back?
Yeah, well, Ambush actually was recorded and produced by Chris Tangarides, who did the first two albums. We had mixed it, but we weren't happy with it. And we got Chris involved, and he actually mixed Noises from the Cat House. Not a lot of people know that, but he did. The management that we had at the time, I'd been talking with them, and they said that we both came up with the same kind of conclusion as to ask Chris whether he'd be interested in, you know, producing, recording and producing, because he had a studio down in Deal on the cliffs of Dover there, called Kingsway Recorders. And we went down there and we recorded Ambush with him. It was just a great a time and a great experience. He had some great ideas, and just so easy to get on with. I think we spent more time laughing than we did recording. And we stayed about 50 meters away from the studio in this accommodation which they provided for us. And it was great. It was just a great time. Craig and I came down about a month later. Craig had some extra percussion to do, and I had some talk box to do. So we were down for a day, and then went back home, and then Chris mixed it. We got Rodney Matthews to do the artwork, who did the artwork, of course, for Crazy Nights. And we got the same guy to master it in London, who mastered Spellbound. So we kind of went a bit retro and used the old boys, you know, used the original team. And I think it came out really, really well.
Oh, yeah, I think it did. And of course, then a few years later, you had your kind of like self-titled album, Tides of Pantanga, in 2016, which just takes it to, what do you want to do? Just coming back. Never Give In, Dust, that track Dust has got such a great riff. It's a bit Rammstein-y in places, the kind of riff, but it's a fantastic, fantastic album.
Yeah, that was, well, we changed a guitar player, almost re-establish ourselves. So we didn't want to give the album a title particularly. It was just, you know, it's known as 2016 because that's when it came out. But the album essentially is just called Tags of Pantang. Some great, great tracks on that. It was interesting to make. Because we had to climb the ladder again, surpass what Chris had done for us. We got Søren Andersen involved. He was like the new boy on the block, and he did a great job producing it. And in fact did the next album, Ritual.
Oh yeah. I mean, Ritual, is, I don't know how you perceive this as from being on the inside looking out, but for me, as being a fan from looking in at you, I think this is just a killer album. Literally track after track, Raise Some Hell, Damn You, and the epic Words Cut Like Knives, and the vocals everything about this album is just to me fantastic. It's like you were in the very formative days, but with a very contemporary, solid, modern metal sound, but there's lots of light and shade on there as well. And things like Raise Some Hell, it's like I always felt that a lot of the Tigers, you on every album you have like what I call a Friday night riff. It'd be like a song that has just like straight out the gate riff. I think Wildcat was probably the first one, but every album seems to have one of these kind of a Raise Some Hell type riffage. And it's just absolutely brilliant. But as I say, the Words Cut Like Knives is just an immaculate power ballad as such, or rock ballad. Is that album has laid the foundations for what's coming in May, isn't it, with your new one?
Absolutely. So we've changed producers. recommended by our record company. We're using a guy called Chu Madsen, who is not, he's more associated with more extreme metal. He's done work for Metallica, and he's taken the Tigers on and really, really got us from day one. When he was mixing the album and sending us the mixes for our approval, there was nothing. We went back to him and said, "Oh, can you change this? Can you do that? Can that be sound different?" He just got us from day one. The only things that we had to go with was like slight levels. Can you turn the guitar solo up? Can you turn the guitar solo down? That was all. And I talked to him probably two or three times a week because he lives in Denmark, which is where his studio is. Yeah. And you know, when I rang him, we would talk a little bit because there's nothing to talk about really about the mixing because it was great. We would talk about food, we'd talk about wine, we'd talk about, you know, me coming across to stay with him because he owns a forest, which, and you come out the other end of the forest and, wow. And you're at the beach and oh my goodness, yeah. So we just had a complete affinity, you know, brothership together, if there's such a word. I don't know how he got us straight away with very little direction, but he has. And I look at bands' careers and ours, all bands' careers, as you have to move up a step. Your career is a staircase, and you have to keep moving up a step with every new project. If you don't move up a step, well, what you're saying to people, we're stagnant. We're just the same. But on the other end of the scale, you can never reach the top of the staircase because once you've reached the top, where do you go?
Yeah.
Again, you're saying, well, this is as far as we can take it. So if you're ambitious, you have to aspire to keep on going up steps. And I think the new album, we've gone up two steps, not just one step. I really do believe that.
I mean, the sound is phenomenal. Everything about it, the drum sound, the snare sound, the bass guitar sound, the guitars, the vocals, everything is just awesome.
Chu's got it just right, you know, he really has.
Yeah. So, I mean, I would say that the Tigers of Pantanga are sounding better now in 2023 than you've ever done.
I'd agree with you. Absolutely agree with you. Yeah.
Absolutely. So when you, because obviously he's like the conductor and like the chef who's got all the ingredients, and all the ingredients of course was your performances and the songs. When you were writing the songs for this new album Bloodlines, did you approach it any differently, or did the ideas just come naturally?
No, they just come naturally. Absolutely. I've never ever set out to write a song. If I said to myself, right, I'm going upstairs, I'm going to plug into my studio, and I'm going to write a song today, I know it wouldn't happen. So I've never ever had that premise. I've always, I come into my studio, I plug into the studio, and I just have a bit of a play,
yeah.
And something always jumps out my fingers without a word of a lie. It literally jumps, and I don't know how it happens. I'm grateful it does.
Yeah.
But something jumps out my fingers. And I'll record it, and I'll leave it, and I'll come back the next day, and I'll listen to it again. And if I like it, then I'll develop it further.
Fantastic. And
that's the way it's done. That's the way it's done for me anyway.
There's a song on the new album called Taste of Love, which starts with piano. Was that? Who played that? Was that one of you guys, or a session musician? Or
it wasn't. When I came up with that idea, the piano was actually my guitar.
Oh yeah.
And I rang Jack and I said to Jack, "I'm hearing this as piano, not as guitar. So when you listen to it, don't listen to it as guitar. Listen to it as piano." I said, "Do we have anybody? Do we know anybody between us that can play this?" And Jack said, "Yeah, I work with a great guy." And if I could remember his name, I'd give him a name check, but I can't. But he is credited on the album.
Yeah.
And Jack said, I'll play him it, and I'll ask him to transpose your guitar chords and picking and all that kind of stuff into piano. And that's exactly what he did. And I said to Joe, I said, when he mixes, I says, can you, I don't know what he's recorded it on, but can you give it like a grand piano kind of feel? And he went, yeah, I can do that. And he also plays Hammond organ on it as well. That's kind of in there as well. And it's just, you know, because we're a hard rock band doesn't mean to say that we can't have piano, because if you go back to 82, you know, we have the actor, the song, the actor, which Fred plays piano on. And it's turned out amazing. And I had a lovely comment from, there's a Ricardo, I can't remember his surname. He writes for a magazine in South America called Roadie Crew. And he, in one of his comments, he sent to me a couple of days ago, he said, I don't like ballads. He said, but the ballad that you've got on the album, he said, now that's a ballad. He says, I now like ballads. So that was quite a nice comment.
Yeah, that's why, because it's a rock ballad, and Jack's vocals on there are just...
His delivery is absolutely impeccable. And the words, the lyrics are quite thought invoking as well, you know. Take a look at yourself. Is that who you really want to be in the mirror? It has everything in it. It really does.
And then, of course, the other thing I'd like to mention, of course, is that you, Rob, and Francesco on guitars, the way you trade solos and everything, it just works so well.
It just happened. Francesco, I feel like Francesco's been in the band for years. It's our relationship is quite incredible, to be honest with you. He's so easy to get on with. He's so professional. He has great ideas. He plays 10 times better than I do. Thankfully. Where on that track that you just talked about, the ballad, where the piano finishes, you'll hear a lovely glass guitar playing, and that's Francesco playing, you know, his part in the ballad. And it's just, that's the part that he wrote and came up with, because the writing is very much shared, you know, with the songs, as I was saying at the front of the interview. My ideas, which I sent to him, you know, he deconstructed them and reconstructed them and taken them to another level, which has given us the quality of the album that we've got. And I'm really excited for people to hear it and, you know, for the comments to come in, good or bad, because, you know, it won't suit some people's ears. And
I think it's great. I mean, it's in my blood. There's a bit, I think it's, so they're about 2.5 minutes in, there's this like twin guitar bit before the solo comes in. I love it. It's fantastic. That's a great track.
Yeah, a lot of people have mentioned that actually. The demo of that, the original demo, which I've got here, which I sent to Francesco, just before I sent it to him, I thought to myself, that needs a theme on the front of it. Yeah. So I played this very simple theme on the front of it. And of course he loves it and played a harmony to it. And
it really sets it up for the solos that come in. It's really, really good.
That's actually in the live set. We're playing.
Absolutely. And also Kiss the Sky's got some great guitar and great solos on it.
Thank you.
It seems unfair to pick out certain tracks because actually the whole thing flows really, really well. And the last song, which is quite an epic, really, making all the rules. Although it's when you say an epic, people think it's 15 minutes long. It isn't. It's like short 5-minute song. But it finishes the album as it should finish.
It absolutely does. And that's nothing to do with me whatsoever. That was written by Craig, our drummer.
Wow.
Yeah, he pulls out these gems once in a while. He says, this is something that I wrote a few years ago. And, you know, most drummers aren't really credited for writing, classic tales, but he writes great lyrics. He writes, you know, great melodies. Jack and Craig are entwined when it comes to you know, creating hooks and melodies and lyrics, and they're toing and froing all the time. But yeah, that song, Craig wrote, he sent that to Francesco. Francesco, you know, developed the chord sequence and then sent it to me. You know, and when I was recording it, I was recording my my ovation on it. I like that track. It's come out really well.
So this is, would you say this is the strongest lineup the band's had?
Absolutely. Yeah. Without a shadow of a doubt, yeah.
So so how do you feel about the band now? I mean, are you really confident about where you're heading in the future? Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. There's plenty of mileage left, in these Tigers. Absolutely. Yeah, there's a live album planned. There's a live DVD planned. We're on writing for the next album. There's all sorts of fantastic shows coming up this year. So yeah, we're definitely on the road.
So the album comes out, I believe, in May.
May the fifth,
indeed. Mm-hmm. And it's available on, is it vinyl and CD?
Vinyl, it's available on black vinyl, blood red vinyl, and on CD, and of course all the usual media platforms as well.
And if people want to come up, order it, pre-order it, or can they get signed copies, is it best to come to your website?
From the website, www.tigersofpantang.com. That's the one. Or of course they can buy it from the record company website as well. Pre-order it from there, I should say. And then of course when it comes out on release, it'll be in HMV and all your favorite record stores. Although not many of them.
And I noticed on your website you've got quite a few gigs already for 2023. Are you going to expand that into
yes.
I mean, you've got some gigs in the UK starting on the 8th of March, is it, in Great Yarmouth?
Yeah, Hard Rock Hell, yeah. Yeah, there's also we're playing all over the world, thankfully. But there's still a European tour and a British tour to be put in the gigs.
Absolutely brilliant. Well, thank you so much. For being with me today, and for any of you watching this, this new album is absolutely worth checking out, and it's the best thing Tigers of Pantang have done, period. I mean, these last few albums, as you say, it's like climbing a ladder, and it already feels to me like you've reached the top. Well, you're at the very top, but as you say, you've still got lots of places in your imagination to take the band next, so that's really, really exciting.
Thank you for your time, and I hope your listeners are still here with us at the end, and they haven't gone to make a cup of tea, but I'm off for another glass of wine.
Well, good for you, Rob. Well, thanks very much for all your time, and take care, and hopefully you'll speak soon, and I'll see you around. Thank you.
See you at a show. Thanks very much, Phil.
Thank you so much for tuning in, and a special thanks to my guest Rob Ware from Tigers of Pantang. And don't forget, the new album is out in May and it's well worth a listen. They really are on top form. And please check the website nowspinning.co.uk for loads of content, loads of videos and reviews. And also please subscribe to the podcast and the YouTube channel. And I look forward to talking to you very, very soon.